From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up,
the fiscal session of the state legislature will formally adjourn Monday.
We'll look back at this week's discussions to approve a budget for the coming year.
We'll also talk about legislation unrelated to the budget and concerns that's raising from the governor.
Meanwhile, lawmakers will meet again later this month for a special session on highways.
The state's latest revenue report looks good for giving the state some extra money to work with.
And we'll have reaction from Arkansas Republicans to Donald Trump becoming the apparent presidential nominee. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotacek.
And I'm Chris Hickey.
That's just ahead on KUAR's Weekend Review podcast. Well, the regular business of the fiscal session is over, and now we're waiting for a formal adjournment Monday morning at 10 a.m. But the key was getting a $5.3 billion budget.
Hutchison, Ingram, Irvin.
The Senate approved the Revenue Stabilization Act, which sets spending priorities based on expected revenues. The measure passed in a 23-9 vote. Democratic Senator Larry Teague, co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee, spoke after the vote.
Members, we're done with the budget. I appreciate your work. You stayed in there and you worked through some hard issues. I appreciate it, and I think there's more to come, so just hang in there.
And it took about 3 weeks, but overall, Chris, the governor, seemed very happy with everything. He pretty much got everything that he had laid out in the budget that he presented to lawmakers in March. And for the most part, you were there at his press conference Thursday afternoon. He seemed pleased.
Yeah, in that press conference, he just kind of went over just the various issues that came up over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks, starting the fiscal session and the passage of Arkansas Works, which so much of the budget depended on. Tens of millions of dollars. Of course, Arkansas Works is his Medicaid program. It provides coverage to 267,000 low-income Arkansans. That took about a couple of weeks to get passed, and it used this sort of complicated line item veto strategy. But yeah, he commended the legislature for passing a budget very similar to the one you proposed.
I'm very pleased with what we've been able to accomplish in a relatively quick fashion in the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's been very successful in my judgment.
And, you know, it's a $5.3 billion budget for the next year. It represents about $142 million spending increase over last year. And I guess we can get into the weeds of all the specific things that got addressed here.
Yes, yeah, Sarah, you were at the Capitol covering the legislature for much of the week. Was it much of a fight to reach a consensus on the budget?
This week, I think things were pretty smooth after Arkansas Works was approved. The one issue that was set aside especially was the welfare restrictions request that passed with majorities in both houses. So I would say there wasn't much debate or, you know, indecision this week.
And what did leaders of the two parties have to say?
Well, all the Republicans I spoke with were really pleased with how things went. I spoke with Democratic Representative Minority House Leader Michael John Gray and asked him if he felt that he accomplished what if the Democratic Party had accomplished what it hoped.
Well, I think there's some good parts in it. I think that we fought to see funding restored to libraries and senior citizen centers, and while it's technically rainy day money, we got it in there. The fight going forward would be get it back in the budget and get even more funding going on. I'm disappointed that pre-K, that money for pre-K and after school programs and things that really matter to our communities kind of got left out of this budget. We got health care in there, which is important, and economic development and the health of all our communities. So overall, I think it could have been a little better, but there's a lot of good things in it that we fought hard for.
So what would you say is the biggest victory? Would that be Arkansas Works? Beyond that, what would be the biggest victory?
beyond the getting past the healthcare hurdle, the biggest victory would be the fights we made for the local communities, the libraries, the aging programs at the senior citizen level. We fought for childhood literacy. I think the biggest victories are that we made the focus on communities, not politics.
Obviously, getting Arkansas Works passed and funded was a big victory for the Democratic side.
And it sounded like pretty much the leaders from both parties overall seemed satisfied. They might not have gotten everything they wanted, but it seemed like there was at least a level of compromise in terms of what did pass. But you mentioned Linda Chesterfield and welfare recipients, some additional restrictions being placed on them through legislation.
Yeah, State Senator Jim Dodson presented this temporary assistance for needy families restriction amendment that would require the state to ask the federal government to allow it to monitor and restrict recipients' use of funds so that they couldn't get cash, but they would have to use cards for purchases. And so I asked Senator Chesterfield, she was really bothered by this, and asked her to explain what kind of impact she thought it would have.
I'm hopeful, first of all, that the federal government says no. If it works as it did in Texas, then we're going to have to put into place a company that will be able to monitor it, which means big dollars. Texas invested $20 million to monitor it, and they have found not one example of somebody misusing these funds. To me, that's money poured down the drain. Arkansas is not as wealthy as Texas. So we're talking about adding something else to the budget that's already stretched to the limit, things that we could use to help citizens like libraries and pre-K, health centers, and we've decided instead we're going to spend this money on monitoring whether or not somebody uses or how somebody uses that ATM machine, I just think it's unfortunate, and I think it's just poorly thought out.
And so if it does require misusing the funds to be penalized, isn't it unlikely that anyone on welfare would actually feel the pain of this change?
I'm not sure if they would feel the pain, but to some extent I do believe that they would, because if you're able to take money out, you could go to the farmer's market and actually get fresh fruits and vegetables for your kids instead of having to go to a fast food joint or getting processed food for kids. You might actually be able to use some of those funds to pay for a kid to go on a field trip so that he or she could be a part of that, or to pay a part of the rent, because there's nobody who gets rent that's going to take that card. People take cash, but they're not going to take that federal card. And so it just makes no sense, and it sets in another layer that is absolutely unnecessary.
And this was one item that was not directly the kind of things we typically address during the session, but was one of a few things. And Chris, the governor expressed some concern about that.
Yeah, he said he cautioned legislative leaders this week about turning this fiscal session, which happens in even-numbered years, into something more resembling a regular session where these kinds of substantive policy issues, what he called it, get thrown out there. A lot of them originate from this legislature's subcommittee on special language, and you know, we saw this these restrictions on TANF recipients come out of this subcommittee, as well as there was an amendment to the funding bill for the Capital Zoning District Commission, which is a local state agency, or a state agency that regulates how building and land use permits are distributed and regulated in the Governor's Mansion neighborhood area and the area around the Capitol. That amendment basically inserted an appeals process into an extra layer of appeals into the current setup, where there's a 9-member commission who can affirm or deny a permit by a landowner or property owner. Basically, now it allows the director of the Department of Arkansas Heritage to reverse that decision if he or she finds it clearly erroneous, is the term that's in the language. But back to the governor, he said it was something that these kinds of policy proposals are more resembling regular session, and it kind of, they kind of take time to kind of flesh out, and he didn't think that was necessarily a good thing.
That was not the design of the amendment to the Constitution that provided for a budget session every other year to concentrate on budget matters, and as you know, that has been sidetracked. Some of the debates on substantive program changes from workforce services to Arkansas Works to capital zoning appeals. And so those are substantive changes that have been presented during this fiscal session. And I hope that in the future we can get back to really narrowly focus on the budget issues.
And you know, this constitutional amendment he's talking about was one approved by voters in 2008 that basically stipulated that the legislature take up budget matters in these even-numbered years and do the regular session in the odd-numbered years.
Yeah, and this was a complaint we also heard from former Governor Mike Beebe back in 2014, that you had things unrelated that were being tossed into these fiscal sessions.
Listening to you, Chris, it makes me wonder if, you know, the managed care proposals and aspects of Arkansas Works plan wouldn't in a way be political aspects of the budget. It just seems, call me simple, but how do you fight over budget money and not have it be political?
That's true. I guess the difference is, and even going back to Arkansas Works specifically, I mean, I referenced the special language subcommittee, and the Hutchinson's idea for passing Arkansas Works, or the budget for it, or the funding for it, originated in this kind of inserting special language into the amendment that would have canceled it, and then he line-item vetoed it as a strategy to kind of ensure that the policy goes forward. But yeah, I guess it certainly has become a sort of a political kind of realm in which, you know, things are discussed and debated. But I guess the difference is that, you know, the intention was made for it to be one where, you know, we just decide on certain levels of funding rather than, you know, adding restrictions to what welfare recipients and you know, inserting sort of an administrative process that didn't exist before in a state agency. Those are kind of different things, and I think is what people are commenting on.
Well, I caught up with the Capitol historian David Ware and asked him about the history of the fiscal session, and basically said it had to do with government kind of spilling out of the limits of the regular session, which might make you think, well, inevitably all that politics might end up in the fiscal session, but here's what he said about it.
The thing is that as years went by, Arkansas's government grew bigger. Arkansans' expectations of their government grew larger. There was simply too much business to transact during the relatively brief every other year session. And so special sessions were tacked on. They became more and more the norm. And so this system under which you have the general session and then the budget session or the fiscal session allows budget matters to be sort of sequestered off and allows the legislators to actually get through the business of lawmaking, of legislating, hopefully within the bounds of the regular session.
Well, this fiscal session may be over, but we now know that lawmakers are going to be coming back to the Capitol a little later this month. On Thursday, Chris, the governor said he will call a special session to begin on May 19th to concern the state highway funding and what needs to be done to ensure that the state is able to get matching federal dollars for highway work.
Yeah, the state is seeking about $200 million annually in federal matching funds. This is originating from the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act of 2015 that the Congress passed, allowing states to get these matching dollars. Part of what came out of the fiscal session is the legislature set aside about $50 million for the state's rainy day fund, which is kind of this one-time surplus money. $40 million of that is intended, or what Hutchinson hopes to go towards this highway plan that he has planned to unroll in a call for a special session, which is expected to begin on May 19th, although some additional legislation is still being worked out, so the governor has not issued a call for it yet. But $40 million of this rainy day money will go to this highway plan. There's also a certain amount, less than that, that will come from general revenue, likely, or there's a proposal for that to come from general revenue in the sales taxes on new and used vehicles, which are currently directed to general revenue, which funds, you know, things like public education and other state agencies. The governor said, you know, he hopes to offset that redirected general revenue with about $20 million annually in additional investment returns from the state treasury. He announced that yesterday. And initially, he was planning on canceling some economic incentives, sort of like the InvestArc program, which is kind of a tax credit for state businesses. But despite calls for a long-term fix on highways, some legislators had been hoping for the governor would propose kind of a long-term fix that might include tax increases. Hutchinson says, you know, hold on, you know, we're just doing a short term here. We're not going to raise taxes.
Arkansans are able to enjoy for the first time a little bit of extra jingle in their pocket because of lower gas prices. I did not want to take that away. I think that's important. That helps drive our economy. So in my judgment, this was not the right time to increase the price at the pump. And so that's why I presented this proposal that does not include a tax increase. My counsel is that there should be a longer term view of highways, but I think that's something that's got to return to a vote of the taxpayers of Arkansas, probably an initiated effort.
And so any kind of tax increase that could happen, as he kind of indicated there, would probably come in the form of a fuel tax. But, you know, he seemed pretty adamant on, you know, making it, putting it on the as a constitutional amendment on the ballot for people to vote for, rather than passing legislation through the traditional means in the legislature. There had been several proposals for fuel tax increases. A few of them came out of a commission that the governor set up, his highway working group, to come up with funding solutions that they had been meeting all of last year and had submitted several proposals, some of which had included fuel tax increases. But the governor said no, no tax increases on gas.
Well, I spoke with State Senator Keith Ingram, minority leader, and he said there are several proposals at this point being worked on, the legislation for this special session for highway funding. A lot of different ideas still being bounced around, and as you said, Chris, the governor said still a lot to be worked out to determine what exactly is going to be on his call for this session.
Yeah, and there's still some maybe side issues as well. There's some talk about introducing legislation that will, you know, revamp the levy system in Arkansas. I doubt that that will really be on the special session call. He was asked if a bill to separate the Martin Luther King Day and Robert E. Lee Day would be on the special session call. And he said, well, no, I don't think there's enough consensus in the legislature to do that, even though he has expressed support for doing that in the future.
Right. Still wants to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Well, one bit of good news that state officials got, there was a new revenue report that came out this week for April. And basically, because of strong individual income tax collections and lower than expected tax refunds, the state is above forecast and above the same month last year. The state took in $661 million. That's $37 million more than April 2015, also $37 million above forecast. So for the fiscal year, all total to date, the state has surplus at this point of $110 million. And the fiscal year ends at the end of June. So the governor welcomed the talk that this will give them more money to work with in the future. But I spoke with John Shelnut, the economist, with the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration, really about what's happening to make this happen.
Well, it was a good month for revenue results in the largest collection month of the year. Gross collections came in above forecast, and lower than expected refunds contributed to the bottom line net available result. The April results for net available were $37.1 million above forecast, and year-to-date results after 10 months now stand at $110 million above forecast, or plus 2.5%. These results are on top of the revised annual forecast, indicating a year-end surplus of $35.9 million and a fully funded budget.
And officials, the governor and others with the Department of Finance and Administration said this also is partly reflective of so many Arkansans working. The most recent figures had unemployment at 4%, which is the lowest rate that Arkansas has seen in about six decades. So said overall, the state economy really is doing well and really welcomed this news. Well, finally, we had, I guess, a little bit of soul searching from Republicans now, as Donald Trump has essentially become the inevitable party nominee. After Tuesday night's primary in Indiana, we had the other two candidates drop out of the race. In Arkansas, people have been divided. You had a lot of the political leaders, in fact, majority of them, pretty much rallying behind Mike Huckabee when the campaign season started. But as he fell out, you had people divided, some going with Ted Cruz, others like the governor for Marco Rubio. But now Trump, the only one really left in the race. And right now, a lot of people deciding, can I support this candidate? Sarah, I know you caught up with State Senator Jason Raper, a very staunch conservative abortion opponent and someone who in the past hasn't really talked very favorably about Trump.
Right. Rapert was originally in support of former Governor Huckabee, and most recently he was a supporter of Ted Cruz. So I asked him, you know, what now for him?
My personal situation is I'm going to do my best to make sure that the worst candidate running for president is not elected. So my position is I'm going to go do my duty, even though I may not agree as much with Donald Trump as I did with Ted Cruz or Mike Huckabee. I'm going to work to see and make sure that the GOP wins the presidency. If I were Donald Trump, if he happens to tune into KUAR and listen to this program, I urge Donald Trump to announce that he's going to appoint Ted Cruz to the United States Supreme Court. If Donald Trump would take a stand and come out publicly and let people know that he will appoint Ted Cruz to the Supreme Court of the United States, and there's no doubt he's one of the most qualified people in America to serve there, I believe you'd have no problem winning the presidency come November. In fact, I may already get motivated enough to call him and tell him myself. But seriously, we cannot let Hillary Clinton and her machine have the power to reappoint that swing vote to the United States Supreme Court. If she does, you will see an assault on religious liberty, you will see an assault on family, you will see an assault on marriage, you will see an assault on Second Amendment rights, and definitely religious liberty in this country. That's my opinion. I am not depressed, I am not weeping over the situation, but I'm going to do my best to make good out of what maybe not be the best situation.
Do you have concerns about Donald Trump's religious convictions and also his previous stances on abortion?
I do have a problem with that. But your situation is that Donald Trump has never been a candidate for elected office. He does what a lot of people in America do. They make an armchair statement, a knee-jerk statement to a lot of things that are out there. I think given the opportunity, now that he realizes that he has to really engage on these issues, I think any person, the one thing that I can say about Donald Trump is, given facts and information, he has the ability to change his position and be convinced. It's the person that never will listen to any argument and never will listen to another perspective that's really hard to lead. It's hard for them to lead, and it's hard for us to follow them because they won't stop to listen to those things. What I think is a great opportunity here is that Donald Trump is trying to listen to the American people. This is why that he's winning, is because people are saying he's finally saying the things that we want to be said.
So, Senator Rapert there, if Donald Trump tunes into KUAR, there are his thoughts.
And he also said, as a conservative Christian, conservative Christians will only have themselves to blame if they don't go to the polls. So he wants to see Trump pick a running mate and nominate Ted Cruz to the Supreme Court to bring out the conservative Christian vote.
Well, Governor Hutchinson also weighed in again this week and said that as the presumptive nominee for the Republican nomination, he would back Donald Trump. It was just back on February 24th when Governor Hutchinson told a national audience on NPR's All Things Considered that he considered Donald Trump's words frightening, didn't feel that Trump was displaying the appropriate temperament to be president. And Chris, to a degree, the governor really hasn't changed what he's been saying. At that time, he was hoping to rally support around Marco Rubio, and Donald Trump did win Arkansas, but by not too big a margin. Ted Cruz came in second, just a few points below, and then I think Marco Rubio was around the 25% range. But even then, despite his criticism of Trump, he was saying that he would support whoever eventually became the Republican nominee. And that's pretty much essentially what he again said Thursday.
Yeah, and I remember in that NPR interview as well, I mean, Hutchinson was critical of Trump's kind of plan, I guess, to have Mexico build a wall and pay for us to build a wall, you know, on the border. And he said things like, you know, we got to be serious with our discussions with the American people, kind of really critical of the rhetoric Trump has been using. And he kind of echoed that on Thursday, you know, saying that the Trump campaign and also other national candidates have not raised the dialogue to a level of civility that he'd like to see. That's the word he used, civility. But he acknowledged that Trump has won a lot of votes.
And so I made the point that, one, I've pledged to support the nominee of the party, and I do that fundamentally because I believe the principles of the Republican Party and the direction that we would take our country and whoever the nominee is, those principles will shape the direction of that administration is preferable to the other side. And so that, to me, is a fairly easy call and the right call to support the nominee of the party. At this point in time, Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee of the party. But it's also my obligation as a governor and as a national leader to articulate my concerns about his protectionism policy that may hurt Arkansas. I want to help shape a more broader trade agenda that he will have. I want to be able to shape his security initiatives. I would like to be able to help shape his foreign policy. And obviously many others that have similar views, we want to take a nominee and say, we want you to be successful and we want you to consider these thoughts.
And of course, you know, I guess Hutchinson's comment about the protectionism policies of Trump might be a reference to the kind of his, I guess, rhetoric on immigration being sort of critical of U.S. immigration policies and also trade policies like NAFTA. And I think one of the hallmarks of the Hutchinson administration has been to try to expand trade with other countries, foreign countries. And so I sensed in Hutchinson's comments that Trump's views on trade policies and trade agreements with foreign countries might be in almost direct contradiction to Hutchinson's views. But I mean, I think, you know, this kind of view, these comments by Hutchinson and maybe to a certain extent by Raper is kind of indicative of a conversation that's happening, you know, all over the country with national politicians on the Republican side. I mean, just this week, Congressional House Speaker Paul Ryan said he couldn't quite commit to supporting Trump unless he kind of falls in line with, you know, some of more conservative platforms. And I think that's what Hutchinson was trying to say, too. He wants, he, as well as other Republican leaders in the party, want to have more of an influence on, you know, Trump's platform than what they're currently seeing.
And part of this, too, is Donald Trump. Normally, when you have people like Paul Ryan expressing concerns, the candidates then usually say, well, I'm going to meet with them. But Donald Trump has not really said that he will go back and work with people who are speaking out against him. There's not the typically how politically things work where people who are going to back a candidate or a candidate who is seeking support, they'll meet and work things out. Donald Trump has point blank said that Republicans who don't want to support him, they can just go away and then come back in 8 years after his second term is over, is what he was quoted on Wednesday as saying.
There have been some news stories this week saying that he's quietly meeting with Republican leadership. So perhaps at this point it would hurt his image to be kind of explicitly making those calls.
Yeah. Part of this, too, is can it hurt candidates further down the ballot? In the Arkansas Senate race, you had Democratic challenger Connor Eldridge, who's running against incumbent Republican John Bozeman, put out an ad on the Internet. This wasn't a television ad, but suggesting that Senator Bozeman should rebuff some of what Donald Trump has said. This ad in particular focused on some of the comments that Donald Trump has made about women.
The boob job is terrible. You know, they look like two light posts coming out of a body.
Blood coming out of her, wherever.
A person who's flat-chested is very hard to be a 10.
Now, Senator Bozeman has not actually been very active during the presidential campaign, hasn't really been speaking publicly or offering endorsements, and certainly hasn't publicly been backing Trump, although he, like most other Republicans, has said that he would support the nominee. But here's what Connor Eldridge told KUAR on Monday.
John Bozeman is an enabler of Donald Trump. He has said he would support him if he's the nominee, and he has not condemned these comments. I do condemn these comments because they're offensive to women and they're harassing.
And Eldridge got some national press about that this week, and it sounds like other Democrats are looking at taking the same approach, that this could really be a liability for Republicans who do just blindly say, I'm going to support whoever is the nominee.
Well, I guess it just reflects the bigger conundrum the party will place and, you know, what can it be going forward. So those difficulties might start here for Bozeman, but obviously you're pointing to a much, much bigger issue for the Republicans.
Yeah, but the question is whether or not it will have an effect even farther down the ballot or not. I doubt that legislative candidates or state legislative candidates would see much an effect by it, but
I guess it could help the Republicans if Trump is drawing people to the polls.
Yeah, and that's one thing. I mean, like in our primary, the Arkansas primary, I mean, you saw incredible numbers, well, not incredible numbers, but significantly larger numbers of Republicans voting in the primary. And one of the national stories has been that Trump has attracted a lot of independent voters, and you know, given that Arkansas had an open primary, allowing independents to declare their party upon voting, it might have attracted a lot of people who wouldn't normally vote in a primary or a general election. So maybe that alone could help him.
Yeah, a lot up in the air right now, and we'll just kind of have to see actually what plays out and whether or not Trump can moderate the tone. But yes, is he really bringing in new people who typically haven't voted for Democrats? That's a key question still being debated.
And I'm curious how many Arkansas Republicans, staunch Republicans, would go the other way and go back to the Clintons and vote for Democrats. I don't know if that's going to be a thing, but...
Yeah, I haven't heard that. I did note that, you know, there's one of our state representatives, Nate Bell, who's probably one of the more conservative members of the state house, had said or was quoted as saying that he has no intention of voting for Trump, but he doesn't no intention of voting for Hillary Clinton either.
Yeah.
And he's going to vote for the Libertarian candidate. Yeah. I wonder how many of those.
And he had left the Republican Party last year, so he's kind of expressing disillusionment. But yes, saying he'll vote for the Libertarian nominee.
I mean, certainly Hillary Clinton remains widely popular with Democrats, but I don't know how many independents or Republicans would want to go over to her. I don't know. I guess we have some reporting to do to find out.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out, and we'll continue following this in the months ahead, heading into November. Should be interesting. You've been listening to KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Michael Hiplin.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotacek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
You can find us online at KUAR.org. If you're not already a subscriber to the podcast, you can go on iTunes and subscribe. KUAR is a listener-supported, editorially independent service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock.